This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest. On the bigger picture, I'm T. Xiao Ik with Lim Soo Ann. So today we are observing International Day of Women and Girls in Science. And earlier, Soo Ann spoke to a female scientist here in Malaysia. What's her name again? Let me see.
Aida Rashida Azman.
Yes, that's right. I forgot her name, but I remember what she's doing. She's doing a PhD in forensic science. Mm. Very fascinating work. Very niche area of research, it looks like. And hopefully she comes up with some outcomes that can be used in forensic science, in the practice. For this second part of our segment, we are still looking at women and girls in science. Perhaps, Soo Ann, you could just recap a little bit because earlier we looked at why we observed this day.
Mm. So it was only introduced back in 2015. Mm. So the first time it was celebrated was on in February 2016. Yep. And so, we did a short hari ini dalam sejarah to look at why we observe this day, how it allows us to, you know, further promote full and equal access for women to participate in STEM fields. Mm-hmm. And then we looked at how the gender gap in science still persists today. And just to reiterate as well, UNESCO data between 2014 and 2016 shows that only around 30% of all female students select STEM-related fields in higher education. So this is, I guess, looking in all STEM fields together. So even though certain subjects might have higher participation from women compared to men, you know, the overall, it's only still around 30%.
Yeah. And it's been a long road towards equal gender representation in science. And, you know, I found this interesting social psychology experiment that gives some insight into how gender stereotypes about science develop as early as in childhood. So between 1966 and 1977, a social scientist called David Chambers asked almost 5,000 elementary school children, mostly from Canada and the United States, to draw a scientist. And this is, henceforth has been known as the draw a scientist test. Mm. And of these drawings, only 28 depicted a female scientist. And all of those were drawn by girls. So not a single boy drew a woman.
28 out of like over 4,000, almost 5,000 drawings.
Right.
Wow. But this has changed somewhat since then. And so in 2018, a psychology researcher, David Miller from Northwestern University, and his colleagues analyzed 5 decades of data from 78 studies. And this involved no more than 20,000 children who were collectively asked to draw scientists. Mm-hmm. And over that period, children have become more likely to draw women scientists.
Okay. Yeah.
So from the 1980s onwards, on average, 28% of children drew female scientists compared to that 0.6% in that original study by Chambers.
Yeah.
So it's a promising increase in the number of children who draw female scientists, but even that, right, today children are still drawing at least twice as many male scientists than female scientists.
Yeah. And, you know, why do we want to look at how children perceive scientists? I mean, it's important because it tells us what kind of gender stereotypes are shaping their ideas about science, and not just who is a scientist, but also who can be a scientist. And it will largely influence how they choose their career paths later on. I mean, fortunately, here in Malaysia, I think we have no shortage of women scientists to serve as role models for young girls who are thinking of a career in science. You know, the first name that comes to mind for me is definitely our astrophysicist, Professor Emeritus Dato' Dr. Mazlan Osman. Also, Datuk Professor Dr. Adiba Kamarulzaman, she's the Dean of the Medical Faculty at University of Malaya and also well known for her work in HIV and infectious diseases. Mm. And there have been so many. Just look at the shows that we've done on BFM and on the bigger picture, where we've had so many female scientists, researchers and academicians.
Especially Malaysian local scientists who are working, you know, who are researching, you know, even sort of researching, for example, environment and wildlife right here in
That's
Malaysia.
That's right, yeah. And health science. Biomedical, we feature a lot of them as well. So really no shortage. And one of them that I spoke to today was Dr. Noor Farah Muhammad Fauzi. So she's a lecturer in exercise physiology at the Faculty of Health Sciences, University Kebangsaan, Malaysia. And last year, Dr. Farah won third place in the FameLab 2019 competition. And as you mentioned earlier, as was the case with Aida as well, this is a science communication competition organized by the British Council. So here's my conversation with Dr. Farah, and she starts off by explaining her field of research, which is exercise physiology.
So exercise science or exercise physiology is a big umbrella. And basically, my work revolves around the topic of how exercise helps to improve how our body process fats and sugar, or essentially fats and carbohydrates. You know, like we humans eat like twice or three times a day, you know, with all the hipster cafes going on and mama stalls. And for most people, the levels of fats and sugar that we consume are sometimes in excess of what our body needs or requires. Yeah. And also for our body to clear away the fats and sugar that we consume, especially fats, yeah, to clear away from the blood, it takes some time, and I mean hours. So the thing is, you don't want all these fats and sugar to hang around in the blood for a long time, because that's going to lead to a lot of complications like diseases and so on. So anything that helps to clear the fats and sugar away from our system faster is considered good. And the only way to do that is actually through exercise. So yeah, so basically that's what my work revolves on.
Okay. And of course, we know that exercise, it will burn the calories and help with weight loss and all that. But what specifically has your research found that adds to the understanding about the importance of exercise?
Okay, so what I have found so far is that if you perform exercise 30 minutes after a meal, so that's not 30 minutes of exercise, it's basically you eat lunch or dinner or breakfast, and 30 minutes after you perform exercise, and anything of moderate intensity, you know, nothing too light or too vigorous, just like a brisk walking would do, it really helps to reduce the fats and sugar levels in the blood. These are the acute responses. We call it the immediate responses that you get right after performing exercise. But because it's happening in your body, you don't tend to see it. So these are the immediate, the beneficial immediate effects of exercise that you get. But most people don't know it because you can't see it. So a lot of people tend to look for weight loss or, you know, improvement in, you know, body composition with exercise. But it's not just that. Weight loss should be like number 73 in the benefits of exercise. So, and this, you know, clearing away the fats and sugar away from the system, that's number one on the list. But people don't see it. So, yeah.
And how did you study something like this?
Oh, right. So I have a degree in biomedical science. I'm a lecturer at Public University. And I have always been interested in biochemistry. And also, at that time, back in 2000, the area of exercise science is relatively new. And I'm not much of a sporty person. I don't do sports, but I really like being physically active. So I thought that I want to take things further, like to learn how we can incorporate exercise or physical activity to enhance health and wellness, as well as, you know, helping patients with chronic illness to improve and manage their conditions through exercise. So I did this in the University of Glasgow in Scotland, studied there for about 3.5 years. And basically, I get people to come into the lab, make them exercise on the treadmill for about 30 minutes to an hour. I feed them food, well, I fed them food. And I was also a vampire. Basically, I draw blood from them. And so we analyzed how exercise helps to clear away the fats and the sugar that these people ate from the foods that we've given them. So, yeah, basically, that's the gist of the research that I did while I was in Scotland.
Okay, very interesting. You know, what sparked your own interest in going into biomedical science?
It's a funny story, actually. Since I was little, I have always wanted to become a doctor. So my dad played a very important role in grooming me towards becoming a doctor. So I got my application into the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland was successful. So I got a place into the college. But at the very last minute, I changed my mind. I want to do medicine, but I do not want to become a doctor because I don't think I had the aptitude to become a doctor because I'm a very impatient person.
Right.
So I wanted to do medicine or something that is along the lines of medicine. Mm-hmm. And then so I told my dad, so I don't want to become a doctor, but I want to do biomedical science, which is, you know, You learn about health and stuff.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And, you know, we are talking about this because it's also International Day of Women and Girls in Science. I guess for you, biomedical sciences would be the area that you're familiar with. Is there a gender gap?
From what I have observed so far, there is not a gender gap in biomedical science. Mm-hmm. And also in my line of work, I mean, in terms of being a scientist and an academician, especially in the area of exercise physiology, I guess I am lucky in the sense that I never had to deal with a gender bias.
Mm-hmm.
You know how like sports is mostly dominated by males?
Yeah.
You know, and but in my research community, there is not a sense of male scientists can do this better than a female scientist. So I guess I have been lucky in that sense. I guess it boils down to the kind of research or the field that you are working in.
What do you think we're doing right then? You know, if there's sort of gender equality, at least within biomedical sciences, you know, we're doing something right, aren't we?
Well, yes, I think we are, but I can't really pinpoint like at what level that we start to do things right. But I guess we have to lend some credit to the school system. I mean, when I was in school, when I got into the science stream, I mean, the teachers were supportive. My parents were supportive. People around me were supportive. You know, there weren't anything like, oh, you're a female and you shouldn't do science. You know, I have friends going into the engineering field and you know, didn't feel
discriminated,
downgraded or sidelined just because they were females. So, yeah, we must be doing something right. It's just that I could not pinpoint exactly where. It's just throughout the whole system.
And looking at your own, say, department now, are there enough female role models as well, right? Especially at higher decision-making levels to ensure that women can progress in their careers as scientists?
Oh, yes. Because in our faculty, there are more women scientists than men.
That's great.
And we have at the top management level, the dean and the deputy deans are females, and they're all excellent scientists in their own area. So I'm really proud of them.
So that was Dr. Noor Farah Mohamad Fauzi, a lecturer in exercise physiology at the Faculty of Health Sciences in University Kebangsaan, Malaysia. And so, Suen, both Dr. Farah and Aida, whom you spoke to earlier, have said that there are no issues with gender representation, at least in their own fields of science. But we know that this isn't necessarily a universal truth, especially, you know, when you look at the presence of women scientists in the public sphere.
Yeah, and too often high-profile articles, you know, conference panels, boards are filled with quite a disproportionate number of male voices, right? I mean, we go through a lot of scientific articles, you know, news articles on the latest studies and all that, and they're definitely, you know, often you don't realize it, but then when you start to pay attention, you realize, oh, most of the lead authors tend to be male, and then, you know, it's not to say that there aren't any female scientists there, but it, you know, it's less, you encounter them less often.
Yeah, and there are lots of complex issues around that as well, and obviously it's got to do with promotion of women, what kinds of roles do they play, even if they are working in that field, what are their respective roles perhaps in a team of scientists, right? And all of that plays into how much we see or hear their voices in the public sphere.
Yeah, and you know, the one way that we see or hear these voices are through conferences, you know, and a lot of keynote speakers at the conferences tend to be men, and panels are so frequently all male that we even have a word to describe them, which are manels.
Manels, that's right. And, you know, so recognizing that we do need more women's voices in the public sphere, especially as expert resources, there's a group of female scientists from the organization or the grouping called 500 Women Scientists who have developed a directory called Request a Woman in STEM. So this is a public-facing database of women scientists all over the world. So if, you know, you're a journalist or an educator, a policymaker, perhaps a scientist, or if you're just looking for some sort of scientific expertise and you may be using this for your news story, inviting a speaker for your conference or looking for a scientist to collaborate on your project, then this database is the right resource for you. So you can try it out, actually. Just go to request500womenscientists.org, and that's 500 with the numeral.
And however, now, you know, when we checked earlier today, there are currently only 23 Malaysian scientists listed.
Right.
And we know that there are way more women working in the scientific fields in Malaysia. So, you know, if you're listening now, do go and sign up to be listed, because it's a great opportunity for people to hear more about what you do and, you know, the work that you're doing here in Malaysia.
Yeah, it's a great resource. I looked through it and, you know, even in our experience, right? So when we reach out to a scientist, even when they're over, you know, working in, say, Harvard University or a lot of leading universities overseas, and they're published in like prestigious journals, they're so happy to cooperate and to give us some comments on their work. And so if this is an opportunity for us to highlight the work that women scientists do, then all the more we should.
Right? Yes, yeah. Definitely. So go check out if you have any interest in this at all.
Well, we did ask you earlier to share with us if you can think of any female scientists that inspire you. So you can still send that in at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or drop us a line on our Facebook page, BFM The Bigger Picture. That's all of our coverage for International Day for Women and Girls in Science today. If you missed any part of it, you can download the podcast on bfm.my/dailydigest or on our BFM app or on Spotify. But first, some music to take you out, starting with Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings with Better Things right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.